That song is Girls Love Girls, and it's from 1979 by an all-lesbian band out of the Netherlands called Wicked Lady. And the song just knocks me out, and you'll hear it all later as part of an interview with the founder of the group. This is J.D. Doyle with Queer Music Heritage, and this is one of the shows I love to do. I call it my Songs I've Been Meaning to Play show. It's where I share with you some of the treasures I've collected that just have not fit into other shows. Before I get to the band Wicked Lady, I want to go back to the early 70s for another all-woman band called The Deadly Nightshade. They were one of the first all-female bands where the members played their own instruments. The group consisted of Helen Hook, Ann Bowen, and Pamela Brandt, and they began playing together around 1968 under the band name Ariel. They garnered some major label attention then, but in those days, they could just not get signed, as female acts were not considered marketable. That band lasted a short time, but around 1972, they revived themselves under the Deadly Nightshade name. By 1975, they had built up enough of a following where they were able to record two albums for a subsidiary label of RCA called Phantom. The albums were called The Deadly Nightshade, and F&W. On the release of the first album, their label released to radio stations only a promotional interview album, which is very cool. It's 26 minutes of them talking between song clips, and I'm going to give you the first few minutes of it. Notice how they define themselves as a band. They were many years away from being out of the closet and were not going for any lesbian identity as a band, or even a female identity. To them, they were just a band. The radio interview starts out with Keep on the Sunny Side and then goes into one of their main songs, High Flying Woman.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day if the bright and all the way. If you keep on the sunny side of life. The storm
is... Hi!
With the Deadly Nightshade.
And that's a Poisonous Flower. It's also a band. I play the bass. My name is Pam Brandt.
I play rhythm guitar and percussion. My name is Ann Bowen.
And I play electric guitar and electric violin, and my name is Helen Hook.
Probably you guessed, we're all women.
Right off the bat, it's very easy to tell.
That's right.
Well, it's real easy to tell if you see us live, and that's sort of what we're used to doing. What usually happens when people see us live is they just sit around and watch us the first... 10 or 12 songs, 8 or 10 songs, whatever it is, and then a lot of things become real clear to them. But one of the questions that people ask us right off when they get to talk to us in between sets is, what is it like to be a woman and be in a band?
More women play than used to, which is nice. We travel around a lot. That's one of the things that you do when you're in a band, and we have played a lot of jobs with a lot of other bands who are also women. And we run into people at work all the time who come up and say to us that they're playing. And that's real nice. That's a real change, I think, and it's a good thing that that's happening.
And we think of ourselves not so much as we certainly don't think of ourselves as an all-girl band. We don't feel ourselves as an all-women's band or an all-female band or an all-vegetarian band or an all-Republican band or anything like that. We're just a regular old band like all the other bands who also don't bill themselves as all-boys bands. And,
Even though people do tend to, I think, draw a conclusion and make identify us by the fact that we're women, tell people that that's not the way we think of ourselves. We think of ourselves as just a band.
We write songs about all sorts of things, but a lot of them have to do with being women and how we feel about it and how we feel about what's happening to other women in the country. And,
what has happened to us in the past and in the present, too.
Right. One of the things that happens sometimes is people use misnomers.
People have referred to People have referred to us as chickens.
Chickens, imagine that.
As if a chicken could play the guitar.
It's
right.
Really amazing.
I've never seen
the guitar.
No, I've never seen it. No, they have.
I've never seen a chicken do anything but rudimentary percussion.
No, they have unpleasant singing voices.
And they can dance. Wings. Some chickens can dance.
Some chickens can dance. That's true.
Their little wings just aren't meant for fretting.
No.
That's true.
This is a song.
It may not be all their fault. I mean, there aren't any real instruments that are designed for chickens.
That's also true.
There is a song that a lot of people think of as kind of our theme song. It's called High Flying Woman.
Did you ever think that you lived in a cage? Did you ever think that you lived in a cage? Well, they're calling you a chick, and the name just seems to stick, and you still don't think you're living in a cage. Have you heard of? You were up a tree. Did you ever think that you were up a tree? Well, they're calling you a name that makes you their fair game, and you still don't think that you are up a tree.
That song was called Coming Through and was from their second album called F&W, which stood for Funky and Western. And that was a good description of their style, although RCA didn't really know how to promote them. They were just too country to be the pop act the label wanted. I've got a piece of one more by them for you, and it was recorded as a joke. A joke that became their only charting record, making it to Billboard number 79 in 1976. The TV show Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman was popular at the time, and they did a disco version of its theme song. Okay, enough of that, but there's a lot more to their history, so I encourage you to visit their fascinating website at www.thedeadlynightshade.net. And now I'm very pleased to bring you a lot more about the band Wicked Lady. You already heard at the start of the show a taste of their song, Girls Love Girls, and it was what inspired me to track down the founder of the band, Sue Exley, for a special interview. Sue is from the UK, but now lives in Spain. This is some pretty cool history. She was the founder of an all-lesbian rock band around 1974, one of the first in Europe. As I said, the band was called Wicked Lady, and while they formed it in the UK, they moved to Holland for wider freedom to do the rock music they loved. They became quite popular performing all over the continent and releasing three singles between 1979 and 1981 when the band split. Now, it may take you a few moments to get accustomed to Sue's accent, but if you need help, all my interviews are transcribed on my site. I began the interview with the basics, asking how the band Wicked Lady got started.
That was over in England, in a place called Morecambe, which is by the sea, and we started just as a three-piece, just playing pubs and things like that.
How was the name picked for the band?
Well, I picked that because everybody used to say, oh, you're very naughty girls, you girls get up to all kinds, you're very naughty. I thought, well, what's another word for naughty? I thought, wicked. Yeah, that's a good name for a band.
Why did the band move to the Netherlands?
Because over in England, they kept sending us over to Germany, over to Spain, over to Holland, over to Belgium, back into England, catch the ferry, back on the circuit in the continent. And I was having more fun in Holland than what we ever had in England, because we started a bit of a rock band, whereas over in England we had to be cabaret and girly-girly.
Well, the type of music was going to be my next question. Would you describe the band as rock?
That's how it ended up, yes. It started from a cabaret into a pop, into getting more heavier, into a bit of punk, new wave, and then it started to even out from new wave into rock.
Yeah, I would agree with that from what I've heard. This was an all-female band. Was this unusual in the UK and Europe at that time?
There wasn't many bands like us, because we played all our own instruments. There was plenty of girly bands that just sang with microphones or maybe one keyboard player, but we were the ones that actually everybody played an instrument.
So the band lasted roughly from, I think, 74 to 81. And
that's
I understand
right.
all the members were lesbian. Was the band known to the public as an all-lesbian band?
Yes, I would say that.
So as far as lesbian bands that recorded, I do know there was one, the Flying Lesbians in Germany, but I can't think of any others. Can you?
No, I don't think so neither. I think we got more publicity when we came out of the closet by doing Girls Love Girls and doing a kissing routine on stage. But halfway through a number, then we'd all kiss. Well, that sent shivers down everybody's backs. And that was even in Holland. But it was all right to do it in Holland, but we were doing it for the military bases with all the guys. So that part of it didn't go down too well.
I want to do it in order. Tell me about the first single, Underneath the Neon Tonight.
That was really a load of rubbish. That was our first single in Holland. But what they did in those days, they played it in one key, and then they used to speed it up a little bit. Well, I sound like Mickey Mouse. So I wasn't very happy about that. So they said, oh, well, it won't be like that on the record. We'll have it right. Well, of course, when the record came out, they didn't do it right. I still sounded like Mickey Mouse. So that was a load of rubbish. Because on the B-side, it was called Manolito. Apparently in Italy, it came underneath some other record label, and everybody thought it was wonderful over there, but in Holland it didn't do nothing.
Manolito has kind of an ABBA feel to it.
Yeah, it's Manolito. It's a bit, you know, slushy. Something else that was.
I've seen two different picture sleeves for that single, and one had you all wearing silver outfits with fringe, and the other was white long sleeve shirts and short shorts and neckties and silver boots. What were you going for an image?
Well, we started off as, you know, all dressing exactly the same. But then the heart of the rock, the tassels, you know, got left behind. The sequins got left behind. And then in came, the leather trousers, the leather jackets, the big butch look, don't smile, look mean. From cabaret to hard rock within about 3 or 4 months.
Before we get to the harder rock music, let's hear that first single from 1978 called Underneath the Neon Light and its flip side, Manolito.
for the very next single, it was all leather.
Yes, that's right.
And that was my favorite single. That was in 79. I want to hear about Girls Love Girls.
Oh, that one. Girls Love Girls and Boys. That was written by a friend of ours. He wanted us to do it. You know, you're all gay and everything else, so you've got to do this. Of course, we had all the gay supporters, you know, no problem. But then we got a lot of bad publicity because of the military stuff. They weren't too keen about it, but it was too late then. The single was out and we had, you know, all the gays on our side, so we really didn't care if the military didn't like it. Mind you, we did stop getting a lot of bookings.
You keep mentioning the military. Were you playing lots of events for the military?
Yes, it was for all the Dutch military, all their bases, and the Americans' army camps, and the British, all the bases that we were doing. Well, because of Girls Love Girls, they didn't really particularly want that, of course, because it's military. So we were dropping most of all our military gigs, which was a shame, because we were doing them regular once a month, and we had a good name. But as soon as Girls Love Girls came out, well, that was a different story. But what we lost on the military bases wasn't bad, because then we started doing the big rock concerts. So we were doing more rock concerts, which we were more happy about, so we didn't have to leave, you know, two separate lives and don't do that song and don't do that one because doing a military base tonight, we could do what we wanted in the rock gigs.
So in addition to losing gigs, did you experience other homophobia because of that record?
No, not really. Everybody else was fine about it.
And here's the song we've been talking about from 1979, Wicked Lady and Girls Love Girls.
Sue.
The flip side of that song was Daddy's Little Rich Girl.
Yeah, I wrote that ages and ages and ages ago. It was a song that was written for my thoughts and feelings.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Third and last single was 1981, Plastic Queen. Again, we're all in leather on the motorcycle on that one. A Plastic Queen had a saxophone solo, and I was surprised at that. That was unusual.
Yeah, well, they wanted to do a saxophone. I said, but how are we going to do this live? And so I ended up doing the solo, and it goes, and I was playing that double notes on the guitar, trying to play a part of a saxophone. And I don't read music, you see, so everything's in my head.
Here's the song, Plastic Queen.
Bye.
So that was the third single, and the flip side of that one was Play the Game.
Yeah, I wrote that one. Play the game, but you know, we're all insane. We were working very, very hard, and I was going through a really bad patch because I was tired all the time. And in the end, it was just a game to me. It was just get on with it, do it. I know you can do it. So I think I wrote that one for my own personal feelings. If I don't experience things, I don't think I could ever write music.
I understand one of the songs the band covered was a Jimi Hendrix version of Hey Joe.
That's right, yeah. It all started in Germany, and the drummer at the time, a blonde girl with very long blonde hair, and she was a Led Zeppelin fan, and Jimi Hendrix. She says, "Why don't you play it with your teeth?" I said, "You've got to be joking." She said, "No, it's difficult." And I just put it onto my teeth, and at first I couldn't do it, whatever. Anyway, I mastered it in the end. Well, of course, that went down the bomb. And every time we used to do it, as soon as they knew it was the end of the show, they'd be shouting, "Hey, Joe, hey, Joe,
right.
Hey, Joe." They were waiting for it.
Which of your singles was the most popular?
Which of the singles? I would say Girls Love Girls, actually. I think that caused more of a smack.
In not counting losing the military gigs, how did your audience change over those 3 years?
Very, very good. Everywhere we went, we always came to full houses. There was always, you know, every concert that we did, we had a lot of support.
Well, even with a lot of support, the dynamics of a band do not always go smoothly. After a very successful concert in Berlin, they were invited to record 3 songs in a studio there, and there were plans to do an album. Ironically, it went so well that one of the members, as Sue told me, got a big head and decided to go solo. The drummer, Jan, went with her, and the band fell apart. Of those 3 songs, one, called Standing in the Road, was a cover of a song by a band named Blackfoot Sue, and the other 2 songs Sue wrote with the rhythm guitar player, Sally Dole. They were Put Some Money in Your Pocket and I Know Where You Run To. They have never been released, so I'm delighted that Sue sent them to me for this show.
Of those 3 songs, which did you like the best?
I like standing in the road. I like, I know where you run to when you run, because I do a nice mean guitar solo right on the end.
Yeah.
Okay, the band split in 81, and you continued as a solo act for a while called Only
yes.
Sue.
That's right.
And then you went on to Spain, and you decided to stay.
Yeah. I was going to go to Spain for 1 year, and then I was going to go on to Portugal to see what Portugal was all about. So I bussed all the way down from Holland. I bought a big camper, American camper van, and off I went. And then I met this girl that I knew from ages and ages and ages ago over when I was up doing Wicked Lady doing the cabaret circuit. And we had a relationship, and we lasted 23 years.
And that act was called Gypsy.
That's right.
What kind of music did Gypsy do?
It was country.
That was a big change.
I never played country before, never. It worked out okay.
Well, you sent me a couple of those songs. One was called Moving On.
I wrote that one. I wrote that in a car park. I wanted to move over to Portugal. And I wrote that in the car park, just sitting outside my van.
What year was that from, roughly?
It was 82.
Okay, that was pretty right away then.
Yes, yeah.
You told me that duo lasted 23 years.
23 years we were together, yes.
And I understand the act was pretty popular in Spain.
Oh, yes, it was. We did very, very well. Within the first 2 or 3 years, we were doing very well. And we did the Entertainer of the Year. We were doing the television. We were doing radio stuff. We were doing all kinds. And we were working 7 nights of the week.
That's pretty popular.
Yeah.
This is J.D. Doyle, winding down this segment of QMH and reminding you that there are more parts to this show on my site. I thank you for listening, and I especially thank Sue Exley for the interview and for providing me with the unreleased recordings and photos from her scrapbook you can see at my website. Again, that's at queermusicheritage.com. The band Gypsy did not release any recordings, but I want to close with a track by them Sue sent me, which seemed to fit her career, called Moving On.